Hi, welcome to My Favorite Neighbors. I'm Sis.
I'm Squirt.
We're talking about the new fall shows that are coming up and just sort of our impressions of what we think will last, what we think has potential, and what we really just think is a copy or a flash in the pan or something really not worth our time.
I don't want to make predictions.
But we have some that we just...
Based on the description as to what they have, I don't think it's going to last.
Or we're just not going to watch. Like, we're just not interested in watching that play out.
But I kind of want to watch all of them.
We watched Alphas. But we were so... maybe it's just me. I was excited for it.
I was too, but...
You and I have talked about this. They just take themselves far, far, far too seriously.
Way too seriously.
And it's just not fun.
No.
It's not fun as a viewer. It doesn't look like it's fun to be a member of Alpha.
No, no one likes what they do. Yeah. Every single person is upset about their job. I was like, at minimum, be excited that you can lift a car and throw it 50 feet. Instead, you just are grumpy and messy. Yeah. Every character on that show is just unhappy.
So Alphas, we quickly crossed off the list.
Nope.
When we were in the theater, we saw the previews for Pan Am. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of semi-excited because I was happy that Christina Ricci was coming back to TV. Yeah. Although it looks like, you know, she made a really wise decision to not be the lead per se, but to sort of do maybe a more interesting
You really think that was her decision?
But it's Christina Ricci. She doesn't have to do this if she doesn't want to. So, if it wasn't something that she was behind, I wouldn't imagine that she would do it.
Maybe.
I don't think she's hurting.
Yeah.
I don't know if we've talked about this on here, but I think I've said this before. The side characters are often the much more interesting ones because they're not the ones that have to be lovable.
Yeah.
They can be interesting morally or have much more interesting backstories or reasons or motivations than the main character who, because they're supposed to be the one that you're introduced through, they have to be sort of semi-accessible.
Yeah.
Which, I don't really think that's true, but that's the way Hollywood has, like, played things out.
Yeah.
And then there's the... Now, I'm getting them confused. There's Grimm.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's Once Upon a Time.
Mm-hmm. I do know about Grimm. Remember? That's the one where the guy... Like, he's a detective in Seattle. Through some, like, special power, like, he's half something or half one another. Like, he can see the fairy tales.
Mm-hmm.
And so murders happen or supernatural stuff happens, but it's like he's in the modern world and murders happen and he's got to solve them and keep the supernatural part hidden.
Okay.
But I think in Once Upon a Time, the worlds get crossed. Snow White has been living in like suburbia for the past 20 years and has to, I don't know, get reassimilated into her fairy tale.
Right. And she doesn't know that she's a fairy tale.
Yes.
And both of those seem sort of semi-interesting to me. Can I tell you what I'm interested in Once Upon a Time? But you never know which are going to be the characters that the audience, you know, wants to get together. And I think it would be really, really interesting, like, say, in the Snow White storyline, that the Snow White in the real world is not with her quote-unquote Prince Charming in the real world, but with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the fairy tale world, she has to get to her Prince Charming. But ultimately, the audiences and, you know, the actors and everybody just really like Snow White with whoever she's with in the real world. Mm-hmm. So then they get to mess with the fairy tale of a much more interesting Snow White. Like, say, in the fairy tale world, she doesn't get with Prince Charming. She gets with Prince Charming's Duke brother or something like that. And I always think those are much more interesting.
Yeah. Like, I think Little Red Riding Hood hooked up with the woodsman.
Right, or something like that. I like those, but I also have been the person who, when they take things from fairy tales and they twist them just a little too far, then I get upset. So I really don't know what the boundary is, I'll be honest. You know, like, I like Into the Woods, the Sondheim thing, because I think it stays pretty true to the stories, but it does twist a little bit, but I hated Hoodwinked.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, they're wildly different. Now, of course, with all of these, there has to be funny.
They cannot take themselves too seriously.
No.
I mean, not watching Law & Order Fairy Tale. They're freaking fairy tales. Laugh at yourself. I mean, I've said this before with Teen Wolf. Dude, you're a teen who turns into a wolf. Lighten the F up. Like, it's not the end of the world. But that show is just so heavy. Just now, 7 episodes, they hit their stride. Mm-hmm. And they finally figured out what they were going to do. Because the first couple episodes was just a bunch of Scott whining about how he's a wolf and he's in love with Allison. And Allison trying to figure out why her family has to move so much. Like, it was like, no, your dad's not in the military. You would know that. Like, they just now are been sprinkling in the funny. Even Vampire Diaries started off. It was kind of serious, but when they added the brother Damon, he brought in the funny.
Yeah.
With supernatural stuff, you just can't take it too seriously because it's freaking supernatural. Yeah.
I'm happy that many of my shows are returning.
Yeah. I'm kind of excited about The New Girl. The previews look like it'll be funny.
Oh, the Zooey Deschanel one.
Yeah.
Fox.
Happy endings. I liked. This is one of those things, I guess, which is a shift in the Nielsen ratings, whatever. That was a show that came on, I have no idea what channel, but I watched it on Hulu. And it was, it's pretty much like Friends. Like mm-hmm. a set of 6 characters, 3 guys, 3 girls, various stages of relationships with mm-hmm. each of them. Mm-hmm. And it's them living, loving, etc., in whatever city they're in. And it was cute and funny and stuff. It got picked up again, okay. which was good. So I'm kind of excited that that's coming back and they'll have a chance to explore it. It's one of those shows that was kind of a slow build, though. Like, mm-hmm. when I first watched it, I was, okay, I'm amused, but I don't know if I don't want to watch another episode. Mm-hmm. And then I watch another episode and say, okay, I was amused. I don't know if I don't want to watch another episode. But each episode, I do laugh. It's mm-hmm. just when I'm done watching the first one, I'm not that excited about seeing the next one.
Yeah, I hear you. That's how I felt season 1 of Chuck.
I like the previews for Whitney, so I hope that goes well. I like Whitney Cummings. I think she's a funny comic. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad she has a show. I don't know about Two Broke Girls. I kind of feel like State of Georgia mm-hmm. could be on network TV taking the place of that show.
Yeah, now, especially its later episodes, its early episodes, it wasn't so strong. The ones that we just watched were wonderful.
Yeah.
And I kind of can't wait to see the other ones.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't get canceled. But I think it's a little too edgy for ABC Family, though. I feel like they don't have a place for it, but I feel like it's a quality show. I feel like the writing's really decent.
I would be all about State of Georgia in my senior year of college or my freshman year. I mean, my senior year of high school or my freshman year of college.
Maybe.
I think I would.
But would you be watching ABC Family?
Yeah, I did. Yes.
But anyway, I like Georgia. Raven Simone's grown as an actress.
And I think Mahondra Delfino is a good counterpoint.
Yeah.
So, speaking of ABC Family, I'm going to get on my soapbox on my show, which I didn't get you kind of hooked into this.
No, because, apparently I just started at the wrong time, because no one knows what the F's going on.
But anyway, okay, Pretty Little Liars. So, I watched it over the winter. I watched what I consider the first mm-hmm. season of Pretty Little Liars over the winter, and I guess I watched them in the mix of, Hulu and DVR. Mm-hmm. And I just got hooked. It was a fun little entertaining mystery. I think it was well served by the books that it was based on in terms of keeping the suspense and keeping the mystery folding in on itself.
I can't even tell them apart. All I know is the blonde one and the lesbian, but I don't even know which one of the three is the lesbian.
Emily's the lesbian, who's played by Shay Mitchell, and she has a tendency to, act with a furrowed brow. Like, that's her go-to for, every emotion other than
joy.
Okay,
so, furrowed brow for her, bangs for Hilary Duff, put them in a movie together, and you only show the upper half of their face.
Pretty much. but she's taken on, a really weighty sort of role, and I think she does it with a plump, but mm-hmm. When she's sad, when she's concerned, when she's upset, which they are 90% of the time.
They seem to calm down. Every time I see it, I'm take a chill pill.
Okay, so then there's Aria, played mm-hmm. by Lucy Hale, mm-hmm. who she's become known for her hairstyle and the feathers.
I like their privilege.
I actually, in the first season of Pretty Little Liars, I thought she was good. I thought mm-hmm. she played a really sort of she was sort of the intro character, because she's mm-hmm. the one that returns to Rosewood and sort of brings the liars all back together. Mm-hmm. There's Spencer. I think initially she was the bookworm type A sports kid who does everything to the nth degree, but also has a really tense home life. And then there is
The blonde.
The blonde, who's played by Ashley Benson. Hannah. She plays the fashionista, she's not really that into school. She's very into fashion. She's very into her friends. She's very into trends. But she apparently used to be big when she was younger. Mm. And then, of course, they're all trying to solve who killed Allison, which... At the current spot where we are in what I will call season two, we still don't know, but they've added on so many layers onto this and alliances and allegiances and backstabbing and secrets and everything that I have no idea what's going on. I mean, I watch it and I can follow what's happening in a scene, mm-hmm. but I can't put it together in the whole fabric of the story. Right now, I don't know what any of these characters is trying to accomplish on any given episode. Mm-hmm. They're trying to solve the murder. They're trying to find the brother-in-law who's gone. They're trying to have relationships outside of each other and without their parents' knowledge. They're trying to, like, get through school. I feel it's fallen off the wagon a little because it doesn't have the structure or the backbone of the books. Like, to my understanding, and this is all hearsay and I haven't actually looked anything up, Sarah Shepard is the author of the Pretty Little Liars books. I believe there are 10 or 13 of them. And they sort of molded them into the first season of Pretty Little Liars and then sort of ended it on this cliffhanger. Now they don't have that backbone. And while she is a consulting writer or whatever, I think because she wove such an intricate early story, they're trying to keep that up and just really creating this mess. I don't know how they're going to untangle it. I don't even think they want to untangle it, which is unfortunate. Feel that the maybe the writing staff, Pretty Little Liars, isn't comfortable yet with letting Allison be dead. And then trying to figure out who the hell A is. And knowing that Allison's dead so that we can then move on to A, or move on to Ian, or move on to Jenna, or move on to some other's misery in Rosewood. Yeah. But, you know, they're just trying to keep all these balls in the air. But when you have all that in the air and four characters that you're trying to follow, it's becoming a little too complicated for what I consider to be a pretty decent fluff show. I totally want to watch Switched at Birth.
Oh, I think it's good. Switched at Birth, I'm impressed. I think I told you in the beginning when I start watching it, when you watch a character, you want it to be the better version of the human being you wish you could be.
Yeah.
But all these characters are flawed and they react the way a normal human being would react, but not the right way. Mm-hmm. You know, and when you watch TV, you want that character to react the right way.
Not always.
Sometimes. Well, yeah. I guess for me, Leah Thompson, I want her to, and she doesn't. Like, if anything, she's the most petulant character on the show. But I think it's pretty well done. You think, okay, the main story is going to be these two girls who were switched at birth. Mm-hmm. But, so yeah, they have their stories. But then they also gave the parents kind of stories and their little storylines that you're following with them completely separate from their kids. One of the characters is deaf, which adds a whole nother dimension to the show, at least for me, what I find interesting, because it's a whole, I don't want to call it a subculture, but a whole group of people that I don't know anything about.
But does it complicate it or does it enhance it?
I personally think it enhances it. Yeah, it doesn't complicate it because it's one of those things where I think they dealt with the diversity well, in the sense where, not that you forget that she's deaf, but it's not that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they separate her, except for when it does.
Okay.
But she pretty much can assimilate into hearing just fine. Mm. She speaks well, which is a bone of contention. They talk about that, about how, like, she has a friend, Emmett, who doesn't speak. Mm-hmm. And, well, no, that's not true. He doesn't speak with his voice. Mm. And she speaks with her voice. And they talk about that, about how, like, not it's a status, but it's a issue. Mm. Mm-hmm. You know, like, some deaf people choose to speak with their voice, and others are like, I don't need to. I was right. born deaf. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, what I do. And so, but they talk about that. They sign, and they do little captions along the bottom in the middle of the signing.
Right.
But she, like I said, she can also speak.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, that works. And then there's a lot of speaking and signing. Like, when a hearing person is talking to her, like her mom speaks and signs
mm-hmm.
at the same time.
Yeah.
And but little things like the phone with the TY person
mm-hmm.
in it, like they have that, they have a doorbell where the lights flash
right.
and things like that. But otherwise, you know, she's a average everyday teen. She plays basketball, goes to high school,
mm-hmm.
yada, has the same type of boyfriend dramas,
yeah.
etc. And the other teen who's not deaf has her own issues.
Right.
And so I think they do a good job, and then kind of a job of how deaf people assimilate into the hearing world and kind of how they view us.
Yeah.
As hearing people. I think it's a decent show. I felt it stumbled in the beginning because I thought it stumbled because they were just too not one dimensional, but I just thought too stupid. But they've gotten past that.
And then the other ABC Family show, which of course I was excited about and therefore turned out to be crap, was The Nine Lives of Chloe King.
Yeah, I tried.
I made it through the first episode and said that I wasn't going to go any further. You kept on for
I did.
A few more.
For like about four or five.
Because yeah. you are a much better person than I am.
I thought, it's got to get better. It was based on a book. Like, how much can you mess it up?
Well, or maybe it was just based on a crappy book.
I mean, it was pretty much like Teen Wolf with a girl and she's a cat instead of a wolf.
It was a little funnier, though.
Not really. She whines, the female girl whines just as much, and the side characters were a little bit funnier.
Yeah.
But, like, the my people, who are the people who are supposed to be part of this cat group, I don't like any of them. And then, like, there's one character that we're supposed to like, and it's supposed to be, like, her loving soulmate, who's my.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's, like, a human who she has a crush.
Is this the 30-year-old man
yes.
playing a teenager?
Yeah. That's the cat, my guy.
Yeah.
And then there's a human who she's supposed to like, who she does like.
Mm-hmm.
And he, it's like, she can't be with the humans because, I don't know if you saw this in the first episode, but, like, if they have contact with the humans, one of their kisses can paralyze them or kill them.
Yeah, I think
so.
I
in the first episode, the guy that she kissed ended up dead.
Okay.
And so she can't ever kiss this guy,
mm-hmm.
but she can kiss the other my guy who we don't like.
But anyway, okay, but so I have a question. Many times it has happened that a show has hit its stride in the second season,
mm-hmm.
whatever its stride may be. Mm-hmm. Now, it might be like with you, How I Met Your Mother, where you liked it first season and second season it changed, and mm-hmm. then, but that's clearly its stride because that's where it became mm-hmm. really popular. Or like Me and Chuck, I didn't like it in the first season, but second season I was fine with it.
Sorry.
So Nine Lives is new, mm-hmm. Switch to Birth, Lying Game is coming out.
Yeah.
Do we think, though, that we should try to give them a season two look?
I don't know.
Because, like, maybe Nine Lives, once it finally ends this run, they go back in, they retool it, and they say, this works, this didn't, and take all the crap out that didn't work, and actually put together a decent show.
No. Maybe. I'd have to look at the promos for yeah. season two to see what they do. And then I just read that Tinker from Friday Night Lights, who was a football player and from East Dillon, woo, the Lions, he's going to be Mercedes love interest on Glee.
I think I saw that headline.
And here's what I'm pissed about. I liked her and
Howdy Mouth.
Because... Oh, it was different, and you're kind of like, what's the relationship? But it's like, he's another black guy. So, what is it, Glee? Asians can only date Asians, and black guys can only date black guys. Like, I'm just kind of like, really, I'm glad they didn't care Puck and Rachel, the whole Jew thing,
mm-hmm.
but like, I kind of like the diversity of that relationship to see where it will go.
You kind of can't win with black relationships on TV. Either mm-hmm. they're black on black, which mm-hmm. is fine, but mm-hmm. then people You know, but then people are like, what? It's only the black guys can date the black girls, and only, you know. Or they're interracial, and then you're like, what? The black girl can't date a black guy?
But, like, I don't think anybody was like, what a horrible, you know, mixed relationship at the end of the last season when we saw them together. Everyone was, like, just intrigued because they were like, ooh, two characters finally together. What's the deal, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so I don't think it mattered race-wise. But this one, we don't know him yet.
Yeah.
You know, and so it...
Well,
knows?
But you know Cord left the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, his contract wasn't picked up or whatever.
Yeah.
So they had to do something.
I know.
And I think they just... Let's be honest about Glee. As fun as it is and as fun as the music is, it's plot development... And storyline creation is not its strong suit.
No.
And so the idea that they're going to do something adventurous and creative with casting or storytelling is not, that's not what we've seen from Glee.
Yeah.
Or the Glee producers, you know. For the longest time, it really seemed like, much to his credit, Chris Colfer. Mm-hmm. Chris Colfer was running the damn show.
Yeah.
You know, for a minute, because it looked like all of the stories were about Kurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that might have been true, and that might have been what he was going through, mm-hmm. but his stories were running the show, and they let that go. They let that happen. And I just don't see them doing something really awesome with any of the characters. And that's just sort of a fault of the writing staff, I would put that under.
Yeah. Okay, high horse about race things. So, another show that I watched that we talked about was Being Erica. And this is another one where I got on the whole high horse about people call it a sci-fi show because she time travels.
Yes.
But it's not sci-fi. She just time travels.
You.
It's not. Like, I don't.
Time travel is still fiction.
It is science fiction, but it's not. Believe me, the people who are watching Battlestar Galactica are not going to watch Being Erica.
You don't know that.
Anyway.
I mean, we don't know any of them, but you don't know that there aren't any of them out there.
Just saying. So it's a Canadian show. Erin Karpluck, I think is how you pronounce her name, is in it. I like her as an actress. I think the show is fantastic. It's fun, lively, decent, refreshing show. So it's on its fourth season in Canada, which is soon to air here in the States, and then it was rumored that it got picked up to be, like, redone in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And so it takes place, you know, like, in Vancouver. It is a Canadian show. Like, they don't pretend like they're in New York or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so they're remaking it to happen in the States. And the woman who created it is all for it. She's not a part of the remake, but she's like, I think it'll be interesting. But my plug for it is that I'm putting it out there in the ether. I think they should make Erica black when they put her in the U.S. Because the thing is that the show, she's white in Canada, and she has a diverse group of friends. But the show has absolutely nothing to do with race. It has to do with Erica. And it's so character-driven and so personality-driven that Erica could be a black female trying to make her way through in the publishing industry, failing miserably at 32, and then having, you know, this therapy to, like, pull her out of it. And I think it would be an interesting spin. So I personally think, like, Chicago would be a good setting, because New York, as a city, has its own life,
yeah.
And which would just take over the show. But
right.
I feel like with Chicago, you can kind of do the whole, oh, we're having brunch outside, and there's not all this paparazzi,
yeah,
you know, type of thing. And, like, just make it a normal story about a girl, which black girl, grew up, family was, parents are still together, and it's not stereotypical, because that's the thing that I feel like Canada manages to do when it comes to diversity, mm-hmm. is they don't make it stereotypical, they just make it about the people.
Right.
Like, in the show Being Erica, she's Jewish, and, like, you don't really think about it. I mean, I don't really think about it as her character. Her father's a freaking rabbi, but she's not stereotypical. It's not like, you
they
know...
They don't tokenize it.
They don't tokenize it. That's yeah. what it is. They don't break into Yiddish. They don't have, like, a nagging mom. She's just Jewish, mm-hmm. and she celebrates Hanukkah. And they do a whole episode about how when she was, like, a kid, she always wished she could celebrate Christmas. But she... or wanted to understand Christmas yeah. and just never did because it wasn't in her house. And I was like, oh, yeah, Erica's Jewish. Don't think about it. And a couple times she would say, like, oh, it's Yom Kippur or yeah. it's Rosh Hashanah. American shows, it'd be nice if there was a show where the lead character was black. Yes, she's black. Her family was black. But it's not about that. It's about the fact that she wants to break into publishing and it's not happening for her. Mm-hmm. And just leave it at that. Because her... Yeah. Because the Erica character that they've developed on the Being Erica show in Canada, her personality is so strong, universal, kind of every girl. Like, everyone, I think, has felt this frustration in their career or life mm-hmm. that it could translate. And, like, I'm pushing for black, but I'll take Latino, Asian, East or West.
Yeah.
Like, either one, just not white.
For some reason, Hollywood, like, I agree with you on Canada, and they're really good at putting diversity on screen and just not trying to explain it.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, what most people live.
Yeah.
You know? But for some reason, American, you know, cinema is very much like, if I put diversity on screen, I'm going to put it on screen, we're going to have to explain how all these people came together.
Yeah.
And then these characters are going to be the mouthpiece for every yeah. person of that race. And that's not fair either.
No.
You know, and that just, you just end up giving speeches mm-hmm. or, oh, it's just
exactly, that's what it is. They don't explain it and they don't tokenize it. Because my other beef is that I just watched that movie, Jumping the Broom, and I was disappointed. Like, whenever they portray black people on TV or in movies, they're either extremely ghetto or they're uber, uber bougie rich.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of like, really? There's no in between. There are no people that are just kind of college educated, middle class, working African American families in the United States. Nope.
Right.
Apparently not. We either all live in the ghetto trying to make it and end things with, well, we just kind of drop our adverbs altogether
mm-hmm.
and end questions with at or what, or we're uber bougie and like forget that we were black.
Right.
And it kind of ticked me off. And I was like, why can't we just show kind of a normal average American family? Speaking of EW, I was scanning through it and I don't remember the whole article, but they were talking about, because I read them backwards.
Yeah.
They were talking about romantic comedies. And I think they were listing romantic comedies or something like that. Or like, why is it so hard to write a good romantic comedy? And I think they were kind of talking in the vein of Friends with Benefits, and how, I guess, people liked it. There was one, Rumor Has It, with Jennifer Aniston and something else. Because, like, guys and girls, I guess, liked Friends with Benefits.
Okay.
And other ones. They're like, why is it so hard? And so they list all these things. They're like, Hollywood doesn't, you know, doesn't want them, or they don't... Or, what is... Crap, I can't remember. Maybe translating overseas. Oh, yeah. Romantic comedies don't translate well overseas, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. And so they listed all these things. And I was like, that's fair. Like, Hollywood doesn't do this. It's hard to do this, blah, 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 blah. All these different stories. So one thing they didn't list is freaking female writers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wanted them to go through and be like, all of these number one A-plus romantic comedies that everybody loves,
mm-hmm.
there's a female who either wrote it or directed it.
Yeah.
I was like, look at it.
Yeah.
And they don't ever... I mean, I feel like if you're in the industry, this is something you should know about. But, like, all the ones that work are female writers. The only one that I have to give them that wasn't was The Notebook. Like...
Yeah.
And that one, it gets me every time. I'm sorry. Each time I watch it, I cry. But Nick Sparks, who I personally think is...
Nicholas Sparks.
Yeah. Nicholas Sparks and Cassavetes
that.
So, yeah, no females involved. But the rest of them all had, like, a female writer involved and or a female director.
Yeah, that's true. That's
you know,
true.
And I was like, so how about you get more of those writing romantic comedy? Because guys just can't do it. They just can't.
But you also don't just want to pigeonhole female. I mean, like, Yeah, I hear everything you're saying, but, and I think you're right, and as a fan of the romantic comedy, no matter what Netflix says, I am with you on that as well, but then you don't want it to be women can only write romantic comedies,
no.
And Hollywood is so tone deaf with regards to, you know, when people say things that they're just, there's, I mean, tone deaf maybe isn't the right, they're so literal.
Yeah.
They're, you're like, if you want to write a movie about black folk, get a black writer. So then they hear black writers can only write about black folk.
Yeah.
You know, and that is just so unbelievably frustrating. Or like, gay writers can only write about gay folk.
Yeah.
And no one else can write about the gay community.
Yeah.
Or, no, other people can write about the gay community, but gay writers can only write about the gay community.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, they become so very pigeonholing that
I get that. I do. I don't want to pigeonhole them, but I also am tired of crappy romantic comedy.
Oh, you and me both, sister.
So I would like to have more of my female writers come out and write them. And, like, I'm sure there are some that have written them, but they're just not getting any play. Because generally there's a female lead, and Hollywood's reluctant to put females in the lead on films. But then also it's a romantic comedy, and they're like, psh, you know, we're not going to do it. They don't make as much money, yada, yada, yada. But,
yeah, but
I think that's part of it. I was like, guys can't write romance. They can write the bromance, and they can, you know, write the action. They can write the friendship plots. Like, I mean, that's part of what I love, like, with Kevin Smith's films. Like, none of his films are romances. Yes, there's a love story in it.
Sometimes.
But sometimes, yeah. Well, most of the time they're trying to get a girl.
Yeah.
There's
but
always
they're
one
like
girl.
80s, like, teen sex drive
sort
of plots.
But still, but they're not romances.
No.
Like, he writes the dialogue and the brotherhood, the bromance, and the comedy. And I think that's fantastic. Guys can do it. They just can't. They can't write the romances. I'm putting it out there. I'm just saying. Stop trying to do it. You make crap films. Let the women write the romance stories, and you guys blow shit up. I'm on my high horse.
All right.
Yep. And then, okay, my last thing is to say, I know that I'm late to this bandwagon, but I am jumping on the bandwagon of The Hives. I have just listened to Black and White album, or I think it's just called Black and White, of The Hives. I love it. I think it's fantastic.
Are you going to play it for me?
Yeah.
Or am I going to have to, like, go find it myself?
No, I'll play it for you.
Okay.
I'm kind of tired of modern music. I'm not tired of modern music. I'm tired of hearing the same 5 songs over and over again. And so I was like, well, let me listen to find some music. So EW had these, like, top 20 recommendations of the best albums of all time. Oh. So I looked up, you know, The Hives, and I got The Hives album. And it's really good. It's kind of punky and poppy, but poignant. And there's probably no song on there that I don't like. And it's not necessarily my go-to music. I'm definitely a pop music fan. Mm-hmm. And it's pop, but it's more pop rock.
Okay.
Even kind of like old school pop rock, though. I'd probably, like, if I were to mix like Fall Out Boy and Cake.
Really?
Yeah. Like, it's got the musicality of Cake.
Okay.
Like, it's just there on point with all of their instruments.
Right.
It's just great music.
Right.
But the singing and the way they sing, the lyrics, the poetry of it is kind of Fall Out Boy-ish.
Okay.
In the sense that you kind of have to listen to it. And what was the other one that I kind of wanted to like, but I didn't like them? Crap. Not The Killers, which I don't like The Killers. I feel like all their songs sound exactly the same. I forgot them. But another band. Like, they were like, if you like Fall Out Boy, you'll like them. And the ones that were like 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Panic at the Disco.
Yeah. All their songs sound the same to me.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I don't like either of you guys. But The Hives, I was like, I'm pretty much like every song on your album, and it's grown on me. And then Party Rock is the one like new modern song that I like, and I had to hear it like 10 times before I grew on. But now every time it comes on, I start to dance.
I want this. This happens rarely, but when it happens, I'm just so happy about it. There are a few times where I've purchased a CD, or I've downloaded a CD, or, you know, someone's given me some music, and I put it in, and I don't know the artist, and I really don't know the artist.
Mm-hmm.
And just from the first song, I'm hooked.
Mm-hmm.
And the last time that I remember it happening was Jack Johnson's mm-hmm. In Between Dreams.
Uh-huh.
And just from the first song, I had no real information about him. I think I'd maybe heard a few songs on the radio mixed in with other artists, and I was just like, whatever. And I don't even remember why I bought the album, but I bought it. And then, of course, you know me, 2 months later, mm-hmm. I put it in and actually listened to it. But I was just hooked from the first song. And, you know, that used to happen a lot in the 90s for me, mm-hmm. because the 90s is my musical era. Mm-hmm. But, like, Desiree's CD, mm-hmm. I Ain't Movin', you know, I put it in, and from the first song I'm hooked. Michael Franti in Spearhead mm-hmm. was a recent one. Well, not recent to me, not recent to anybody else. All the Rebel Rockers.
Mm-hmm.
I put it in the first song. I'm like, yes, this is exactly what I need to listen to. And I listened to the whole thing all the way through, and I loved it. The new music that I've been listening to is okay, but it's not hitting that intangible, intrinsic, just, you got me.
Yeah.
You know, that if I may just show my total biology thing, it's not tapping my hypothalamus
mm-hmm.
right before I have any consciousness of the fact that I am yeah. in this. You know, like, I'll be honest, I was listening to Adele's 21, and mm-hmm. I know I was listening to it on random, mm-hmm. and I know there's a reason for album order and blah, blah, blah. But I put it on, and I was just like, okay, the piano in the background is beautiful. Her lyrics could be soulful. Her singing, you know, is very
mm-hmm.
pure and real and mm-hmm. raw. But I'm just not feeling it.
Well, I have to say, like, I've said this before with Adele, like, she's blown up with Rolling in the Deep mm-hmm. on 21, but I personally don't think it's her best song. And I like 19 better. Like,
okay.
I don't know if it's just because I've worn 19 out.
Uh-huh.
Like, I've listened to it, and I could sing every song on 19
mm-hmm.
the way I want to, but, like, as far as albums and songs go, like, when I was like, Rolling in the Deep blew up, I was like, that's great, but it's not her best song.
Yeah.
Like, she has so many other really good songs on 19.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe that's it. Maybe, you know, I'm just, because Rolling in the Deep is mm-hmm. the one that's on the radio all the freaking time,
mm-hmm.
and every TV show has
yep.
used it in some way, shape, yep. or form. To be perfectly honest, and of course, because I'm looking forward to it, it's going to suck. I'm looking forward to, I don't know the name of the album, but the album that the Teddy Bears are doing with Eve.
Mm-hmm.
Because Teddy Bears did Cobra Style, mm-hmm. which every show used,
mm-hmm.
But I really like it, and it's a sort of, like, reggae funk with, like, techno,
mm-hmm.
And I think that behind Eve's lyrics
mm-hmm.
has just gotta be awesome. It's yeah. just gotta, but, you know, knowing me and the
Ooh,
way
speaking
I like
of,
things.
Sorry, not to cut you off, but speaking of combos, I think tonight is when Kanye and Jay-Z's song is supposed to premiere, video supposed to premiere on MTV.
See, I'm not, I don't, I kind of,
everyone is like bouncing off the walls.
Everyone who is under the age of 16
is
bouncing off the walls.
EW wrote a whole thing on it, and they're all like, oh my gosh, it's gonna be a big blow up. And
why?
Because it's two great minds.
But, like, haven't we passed that?
What?
I mean, in this day and age of, like, information overload and everything, is anything really groundbreaking? Like, 2 years, I would even say, like, 2 years ago, if they had done something like that, yeah, it would have been huge. Like, wasn't there that, what were the two rappers who released things on the same day? And there was this, like, battle of, like, the CDs.
And maybe 50 Cent and somebody.
I think it was 50 Cent and Kanye. Like,
oh, okay.
They both released their albums on the same days, and it was, like, this battle of who is going to be the voice of this generation for
mm-hmm.
whatever. And that was, like, a big deal mm-hmm. in, like, movement building. But now, I can't
imagine.
Well,
it's not releasing it. Like, they collaborated and created a piece.
Right,
so
but, like, what I was saying about that is it created a groundswell and, like, all this
mm-hmm.
passion and all this energy. I can't see a released video creating that much energy. And maybe I'm just out of touch.
Well, it's the first song from their new album. So no one's heard what this album's going to sound like yet.
Still, I don't know. I mean, I can't even imagine caring that much.
Yeah, well, I don't. I just, unless it's good. Because I personally don't think, like, well, I haven't listened to anything Jay-Z's put out recently, but the stuff that Kanye's put out recently, I haven't liked. Like, it wasn't bad. Like, kind of like you were saying, it wasn't bad, but it didn't hit my hypothalamus. Like, I wasn't like, ooh, really want to listen to it. Not like, I do have his first two albums, College Dropout and Late Registration.
Yeah.
And I like 70% of the songs on those albums. They're, yeah, about 30% of it I could do without. But this one, like, I mean, his kind of more recent stuff, I haven't been like, ooh, need to listen to it. It's so great every time it comes on. But I did like Lupe Fiasco stuff, and pretty much everything on his album I liked.
Yeah.
Except for the use of the N-word.
So, you know me, I love music, and mm-hmm. I like the idea of collecting music. I mm-hmm. kind of always have, you know, mm-hmm. from a very early age. I wanted a jukebox because I wanted all the records I could ever have mm-hmm. at my disposal at any time so mm-hmm. that I could hear a wonderful mix. And then, thank heaven, because, you know, Steve Jobs didn't have enough to do, he created a portable jukebox mm-hmm. for me in the form of an iPod, of which mm-hmm. I am now on my third. Mm-hmm. And hopefully soon to be fourth. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of songs on my iPod. It's pretty much full. A lot of them aren't songs I listen to on a regular basis, mm-hmm. but they're songs and albums that I keep because I like one or two songs, and I worry, and it's true, I do worry, that if I delete the songs that I don't automatically like that don't hit my hypothalamus, mm-hmm. that I'll then miss out on going back and listening to the entire album later, and getting, like, a different perspective of this. Like, point...
I agree.
You know, like, total point in...
Yeah.
Like, Meredith Brooks.
Uh-huh.
Bitch was the uh-huh. one off Blurring the Edges that everybody heard and uh-huh. everybody really liked. And if I had made that... Because, like, the rest of her album is okay, it's not great, but whatever. If I had made that decision to only keep Bitch and to delete all the other songs, mm-hmm. I would have missed out on some of the other songs mm-hmm. that weren't really radio played, but then I learned to love.
Mm-hmm.
But now that first of all, I have, I would say about 20% of my iPod is music that I have not yet listened to,
mm-hmm.
Because it's either the album from an artist where there was one song I liked, mm-hmm. or, you know, that sort of thing. But going forward, I start to think especially when I hit like things like Adele's 21, and I've listened to it now only once, but I'm not feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
Do I delete all the songs on it that I don't, you know, that I don't feel and will not, I don't feel will trigger anything? So I'd leave Rolling in the Deep, and I'd probably delete all the rest from 21. Or do I leave 21 on there knowing that I haven't listened to it and haven't liked it yet, but maybe in 5 years when I put it on, I'll probably really like it?
I don't know. I say leave it on there. I mean, I buy an album for the album. And yeah, sometimes there's songs I don't like, but occasionally you go back. Like, I do this often with Cake. Like, I bought Cake Fashion Nugget because of Going the Distance.
Right.
And there was one other song.
But Going the Distance,
Six Shifts and Safety Belt.
Yeah, Going the Distance was their popular
was their
one
big
that was,
song.
Yeah.
And I listened to the rest of the album, and there were other words, songs on there that I was like, And then, like, I came back in 2 years, and I was like, oh, perhaps this is a great song. And then it was the song for Coupling. And then as I continue to listen to it, there are more songs that I like on there.
Yeah.
Like, I think the album is Short Skirt and Long Jacket, which is the theme song to Chuck. Didn't know it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought it because I like Short Skirt and Long Jacket, but I really haven't listened to any other songs on the album. But Cake is a brand for me, so I pretty much know that I will like anything that they
see, create. And I do hear you on that, and there are some artists on my iPod who are just like a brand. Like, perfect example, Sarah McLachlan.
Mm-hmm.
her, not her newest, but the one with her, like, second to most recent one, the one with World on Fire and Stupid and everything. I've listened to the first three songs, and I really like the first three songs, and I haven't listened to the rest of the album, but I also know I'm just not going to delete it, because at some point I am going to listen to it, and like all of her other albums, I've loved them. But then there are others that, like, some I got from you, and some, like, someone told me, oh, get this album from this artist, where they're not a brand for me, and moreover, they quite possibly could be a flash in the pan, and there's no reason for me to keep all of this, except for the fact that I'm sometimes a completist, which I don't know if you can be a part-time completist, but, you know, and the idea of listening to something in its entirety, in its universe, is sometimes better than listening to it on random.
Yeah, I agree. I think you should keep them. I try and keep all of the ones that our albums, if I buy it as an album. Like, if I just buy it as a song.
And it's very different than before, because when I would used to buy them as an album, I would have a physical CD. You know, so, like, I'd have a physical CD, and if I wanted to pull a song off of it, I would pull the song out and put it on a mixtape or a mix CD or my iPod, but I would have that CD, so if I ever wanted to go back and listen to Exposé's 1991 album, I would just pop in the CD. Now, because a lot of these are shared or digital or whatever, I don't have that, so if I delete it, it's gone. You know, I don't have the option of let me hear it in the manner in which they had intended me to listen to it. So, you know, to me, that makes the decision much harder. And then, of course, the iPods only have a limited capacity. And they die, you know, slow, but musical deaths.
But when your computer dies, like,
your account, your iPod account's not linked to your computer.
But I upload stuff to my computer that's not on my iPod account from my CDs.
Right, but then if you have the CD, you can do it again.
Yeah, it's a pain in the butt.
Yes, it is, which is why my iPod doesn't have half of the crap on it. Do you know, I just recently put Shania Twain's album back on my iPod.
Such a pain.
But, you know, like, it doesn't have, it really doesn't have any of the stuff from college, because when it crashed the second time, I just didn't re-upload the CDs. So I'm missing half of that. I just, I wonder if I should just get, like, two iPods. But then I would have to, I wouldn't, that would be too confusing. I have to make decisions about, like,
Goes on what?
Which goes on which one do I carry, blah, 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 blah. Plus, that would just be a waste of money.
I'm disappointed in the state of music, I guess, when I turn on the radio. But I guess it's also because I listen to radio stations and they only play, like, 15 songs.
Pretty much. Rotation. And we don't listen to the radio as much as we used to, or in the sort of off hours that we used to. I distinctly remember in middle school having the radio on in my room at like 8 o'clock at night, you know, and listening from like 8 to 10, and that was, you know, because I didn't have a TV in my room, or might have, but whatever. But that was, that was where you heard a better mix of music. You know, some new, some old, some good, some classics, and whatever. But oh, those days are long gone, aren't they?
I miss it. I miss, like, new artists and quality stuff. Foster the People is blowing up, though. They, now their video is actually on MTV. I like their song, their one song. I haven't heard any of their other songs.
The only thing we didn't do is a pop culture.
No, I dropped the book.
The where?
I don't know.
Wait. What?
It's downstairs. I dropped it somewhere. You had the things all wrapped around it, and
because I wanted to keep everything together.
Well, it's not.
What?
I love you too.
No, I'm done. I'm not talking to you anymore. You made me mad. Oh my god, I can't believe you.
Yep, that's me.
All right. Okay. So if you want to join any of the conversations that we have started, you can follow us on Twitter. We are on Twitter at MyFaveNeighbors. And thanks for stopping by. This is Sis.
And this is Squirt.
You'll know us when you see us.